Prestigious, powerful, privileged. This is Fulbrook Academy, an elite prep school where history looms in the leafy branches over its brick walkways. But some traditions upheld in its hallowed halls are profoundly dangerous. On today's show, I talk with Brendan Kiley, author of Tradition is Not an Excuse. The novel follows two students, neither of which feel they belong. Welcome to the show, Brendan.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Well, and thank you for being here. Jules Devereaux and James Baxter are the two protagonists. What was that like to shift your thought processes and write for two distinct people?
I really appreciate that that question, because it is a different thought process, a different voice. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important when trying to tackle a story that is grappling with misogyny within an institution, that I was hoping to try to do my best to sort of do honor to the courageous women who have been speaking up and talking about this for so long, and also talk about the men, those who have started to listen and are doing a better job listening, and also those who can make a shift and themselves begin to do a better job listening. And so for me, I thought it was essential to have two voices. So to go back and forth meant, well, I'd spend a significant amount of time digging into my own history and past and the kinds of ways that I was cultured as a teen boy to try to write Bax's perspective. And for Jules, I had to do a significant amount of interviewing and listening and speaking with women who trusted me with their own stories. Mm-hmm. And so it took a lot of time and a lot of effort to make sure that I did justice to the trust they placed in me.
Well, and what's interesting is you're a white guy.
Yep.
And one of the questions that came across was, why did you feel that you could tell the story?
Right. So in some regards, that's why, again, I think it's important that I try to tackle this with more than one perspective. I think if I had just tried to tell the story from Jules' perspective, that might have been folly on my part. Mm-hmm. So it's important, one, because I think that I want to ask one of the central questions of the book, as I started, was how can men be better feminists? And so for me, I think that that's a good question to ask, because I think that's a question that we need to address and answer in order for us to begin to really come to terms with so many of the issues that the Me Too movement and really the women's movements for all of history have been asking us to address. And also, I think, again, it's important to make it a dialogue. And so I don't know if I have the right to necessarily, but maybe another way of thinking about it is that I'd like to do my best to travel the path of empathy that I'm asking readers to go down. And so therefore, I need to do some of the work to try to tell the story from that perspective too. And again, I'm relying on people whose stories are real life stories. And as long as they were willing to trust me with the story, then I would do my best to do them justice.
And then where does James Baxter come in? Because he comes off, as I began the story, as a sympathetic character in his own right, because he's coming to a prep school that he's unfamiliar with, a little awkward. Where did he come in?
So, again, Bax's story is one that's familiar to me. I grew up outside of Boston, and I lived in a blue-collar and middle-class town, and I ended up going to a high school in a much wealthier community, and I felt out of place as I made that shift, just like Bax feels out of place making a similar kind of journey to do a postgraduate year in Fulbrook. But in addition, Bax is harboring a secret at his former school. He has some history with violence, and what he's realizing, in fact, that he's been cultured to be a violent machine. As a football athlete, as a hockey athlete, stars in both sports that encourage a certain amount of competitive violence on the field, he's beginning to review what it means to somehow and sometimes subtly take that off the field and how it's incorporated in the rest of your life. So I hope he's somewhat sympathetic at the beginning of the story, because he's complicated. He isn't out there to ignore the privileges of his life. He's beginning to review them because he can see the damage they might cause.
Well, I think these characters are definitely very relatable to a number of people out there, a number of young adults. We are talking with Brendan Kiley. He is the author of Tradition, It Is Not an Excuse. And I guess when you look at it from a man's perspective, it is another voice that we need to hear as well, that women need to listen to. If we all just sort of listen more to each other, we could get along a whole lot better too. So hearing that other perspective is also good. What is it like for a man to be a feminist? Is that okay?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, I think one way that I try to think about it is, I'm not sure I get to decide whether or not I am a feminist, but what I will try to do as I move forward in my life is practice as much feminism as possible. I mean, I would love to declare myself a feminist, but I leave it to those who I think who have been having this fight for so long, and the folks who have been leaders for so long, to really still do that in some way. And so for me, I think how men can practice feminism and try to become better feminists is, number one, we have to become much better listeners. And I think we have to listen to the stories and the truths that women are sharing with us today, whether that's in the celebrity world, whether that's in the workplace, whether that's in our schools, our churches, across the board. We have to do, as men, a much better job listening. And then after that, the essential job is believing what we're listening to. Because I think too often we engage in practices of gaslighting that are ultimately incredibly harmful. Mm-hmm. And after that, I think the next step is that we need to do a better job practicing empathy. And for me, I feel like a novel is the kind of space that allows us to begin to work on those skills of empathy. We have to sit in the hearts of these characters, both Bax as he's trying to become, you know, a bit more feminist in the way that he operates, and then also Jules. We have to listen to Jules' story, and we have to believe her story, and we have to sit in her heart as she explains how she's been harmed. And the final piece of the puzzle, I think, for what men should be doing is they should be standing up in spaces that are predominantly male and giving voice to the people who are being excluded or harmed in the room who are women. Meaning, I can think back to all those times in the locker rooms that I was a part of when I was growing up, and the kinds of jokes that men were making and young men were making, and the kinds of statements that they would make about women. And in, you know, my regret and shame, I never stood up enough as I should have back then. And I think about that now, and I think about the opportunities I have in the workplace, the opportunities I have in my everyday life when I'm in more male-dominated spaces, to create space for some critique of the misogyny in that space and to make sure that I speak up and stand up, especially against other men.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I've worked in male-dominated fields all my life, and especially as a younger woman, and the supposed sort of locker room talk, it was vastly different. And most of the time, I just step out because that's not really necessarily a complaint. That's not a, like, poor me thing at all. It's just at that time and space, and that was 35 years ago, that just didn't happen. A woman, you just, hey, you got a good paying job, you're doing this, you can put up with some stuff because we're here. And now it is so wonderful to see this nice shift. However, wish it didn't have to take what it has taken. Then you look on the other side of it too, and sometimes you see where there's this big effort with celebrities, or there are also people that may be using some of those things to gain recognition that perhaps they would have never received. There is a scale, I think. But there I go off on a tangent. I'm sorry, we're talking with Brendan Kiely. And I think that's what's great about your book Tradition, is that it does bring that conversation out even further, and especially for the young adults that read it. It's very well written. I love the way you go back and forth with Jules and Baxter. And I wonder, did you, when you were writing the back and forth the way you did, did you write more of one character than the other and then switch? Or how did you, what was your process?
I really appreciate that, because yes, there was, so I was more nervous sitting down to write Jules' half of the book. And as I worked through, and I was working on scenes and scenes from her perspective, I would work on those scenes for a while, and then I would go switch gears and I'd work on Bax for a while. But I kept going back to Jules because I felt like I really wanted to make sure I found, you know, the right voice for her character. And it wasn't until I found what now becomes the first line of the book, which essentially is about, you know, Full Book Academy. They told us to be ready to take on the world, but then they told us to do it quietly. What if I needed to be loud? That idea, when I heard that voice in my head, I dumped everything else that I had written for her and started from scratch there. This notion of, they told us to do it quietly, but what if I needed to be loud?
I love that.
And for Bax, then I had to go back and say, oh my gosh, yeah, I don't know his lines. I don't know his voice. I'd been taking him for granted the whole time. And I had to go back in and think about his. And I dumped everything that I had written from his perspective after I found what becomes his first line, which also is a kind of a plea in the dark. And he's essentially saying, most people don't get second chances. I'm not sure I deserved one or even wanted one. But Fullbrook Academy, this is it, and this is what I did with it. And so for me, I feel like I did spend a lot of time, you know, in one voice and then the other, but it wasn't until I nailed those particular lines that I was able to proceed.
And it is, it's a great story. Again, I really encourage folks, read this, get your kids to read this. Tradition is Not an Excuse by Brendan Kiely. And there's been some recent controversy in book publishing, and especially for children's book publishing, about the Me Too movement. What are your thoughts about that? And have you experienced that on the road?
So, I really appreciate this question, because absolutely, it's something that every industry has to address and every aspect of our lives. Because I think as we have known for all too long, the misogyny runs too deep. And now, thankfully on some level, but unfortunately on another level, we have courageous women who are standing up and doing some pretty powerful work to get us to call us to accountability. And I have to say that it's been pretty tremendous to see industry leaders like Grace Lynn or Gwenda Bond or Debbie Reese, all of whom are women who have created projects to get us to think more carefully about what we're doing in the industry. I mean, I really applaud their work, and I try to find whatever ways are the right ways for me to join them in this. And also, I think with having a book about this subject matter out there right now, I can use the position that I'm in to try to encourage these conversations further, whether that's in publishing or in the educational spaces as well. I think it's really important for us to continue the work that so many women have been doing for so long. I mean, I think about the Me Too movement, and I think about all the notoriety that celebrities have gotten speaking out about that. But we have to remember that Tarana Burke started the Me Too movement more than 10 years ago. And she's a black woman who has been working hard for decades. and it's shouting out leaders like that I think we need to do as often as possible, and for folks like me to join the movement they already started.
And what do you say to men who, you know, they think, nah, I'm not going to work. I don't want to work with women anymore. My actions might be misinterpreted. What would you say to those men?
Well, I think I have two points to say to men like that, because it seems dangerous to me to think from a perspective of, you know, well, I'm under attack now. I don't have the freedom I'm accustomed to, because there's a lot of entitlement in that perspective. And people who, as you were sharing earlier, who have had a whole number of experiences where they have had to adjust the way that they act or the way that they live or curtail the freedoms they would like to enjoy, it doesn't seem like it's asking much for us to ask some people to begin to make some shifts and changes and still participate in the workplace, but shift and make some changes. Yeah. I also think it's true that there are going to be some people we're not going to reach.
Right.
And so for me, and one of the reasons why I really love writing young adult literature, is that I think I can have a valuable and productive conversation about issues I care about, like ubiquitous misogyny, with young people, because I just see so much hope in the next generation to come. I mean, we look at student leaders who are out there challenging us to think about really important issues like voting and gun rights, and this is a generation that I feel like I can really communicate with, and one that I want to put more of my efforts towards. And in the meantime, when I'm in the moments where some of those people of my generation will actually listen to me, I'll say what I said before.
And, you know, that's interesting that you actually answered the question I was going to ask, is what are you seeing among young people right now? So that's
well, right. I mean, I feel very grateful. I've had the chance in the last couple of years to travel around the country and speak to more than 50,000 students in schools all across the country. And that's an enormous privilege, and I'm really grateful for it. And it's remarkable to see and to listen to what these young folks are interested in, and to be a part of their energy, and to funnel that into ways that help folks think about how they can make productive changes in the institutions they're a part of as they grow up, is really a gift, and it's pretty exciting.
Oh, well, Brendan, thank you so much for your time. The book is Tradition is Not an Excuse. It is a young adult novel by Brendan Kiley. Brendan, what's next for you? Are you just continuing this process? Do you have another book ready to go?
Yeah, no, thanks. No, yeah, it's hopefully it's a never-ending process, right?
Oh, yeah.
Keep cranking out the work, right? Absolutely. I'm working on a few books right now, and I'm hoping to reach even some younger audiences and also maybe some older ones too. But in the meantime, I like I said, what's next for me is that I get to right now get out on the road and over the next academic year talk to young people all across the country about how a novel like Tradition can help us have more influential conversations about misogyny in the workplace and in schools, and how to shift that culture into one that is practicing more feminism at large.
All right. Oh, Brendan, I'm excited for you and for us. So thank you so much. Again, the book Tradition is Not an Excuse. Brendan Kiley, thank you.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You bet.